Malcolm Honlein. Ironically enough, both Malcolm Honlein and Rabbi Yudin are in the Holy Land. Could you imagine? The snow is falling and they're both in the Holy Land. Malcolm Honlein is in the holy city of Jerusalem. He is the executive vice chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Joins us for the weekly update here at JM in the AM. So you were desperate to see some snow this winter, so you headed on over to Jerusalem, huh?
I figured if I wasn't going to get it in New York, I would get it here. And I did get it, but although by New York standards, this is not snow. And it was, I came actually after the snow stopped falling. They did have between 4 and 6 inches of places here, much higher elevation amounts in other areas. And it's very interesting to see the ramifications of this. Not only did it shut schools yesterday and today here, and many stores, many restaurants were not open, but other things were closed. People had difficulty getting around because they have no real capacity nor drainage system for dealing with this. I don't think they had many snow plows to clear the road. So even Route 1, the major road from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, was closed for a good part of yesterday. But the good thing is, number one, that the Sea of Galilee is up about 70 centimeters, which is approaching the red line, the top red line. You know, as the crisis and the water shortage got worse and worse, they keep creating a new red line and a new red line. It's sort of like with Iran, but now this raises the Sea of Galilee, which is the largest source of fresh water for Israel. And with the snow melting, will raise that even further. Actually, the snow is more beneficial than this heavy rain because it runs off often into the sea. The other beneficial thing was that the tunnels from Gaza to Egypt and Egypt to Gaza collapsed. Many of them collapsed or were flooded.
Are you serious? Wow.
Because of the heavy rain. I'm serious. And the and they were put out of business, essentially, for several days. Now they're going to have to start reconstructing them. So what the jets didn't do, the rain did and the snow did. Clearly, in the desert, you don't prepare for this kind of rain and onslaught as they experienced for during days this week. Also, many drivers were stranded on the streets in the West Bank. You had incidents where Palestinians used as an opportunity to throw stones at the sitting ducks, but it seems that most were cleared, and the army came in and evacuated people all over the country who were stranded on roads, not being prepared to deal with this.
Well, first of all, let me just write this down. Malcolm compares the red line of the Kinneret to the red line of Iran. Secondly, our observer who traveled from Ben-Gurion to Yerushalayim yesterday, not using Route 1, obviously, said he had two observations. Number one, that the roads were actually open when they were declared closed. And number two, Israelis do not know how to drive in the snow.
I think that is borne out when you look at the pictures. But many cars were also damaged by the rain and the flooding.
Right.
In some parts of it looked like the aftermath of Sandy, when you saw cars piled up in different places. I don't think this was very widespread, but certainly in a number of areas, people had to be rescued from rooftops.
And on the Israeli news, I was hearing how people were pining for a FEMA-type arrangement. You should let them know, Malcolm, that FEMA basically doesn't do what they say they're going to do anyway when it comes to helping people, so they're not missing much.
They can expect as much from the insurance companies as people in New York and from FEMA in America will not help the people in Israel.
How sad, but I'm glad you said it. Also, there was one other thing. Yes, I did notice, probably saw it on Facebook somewhere, there was actually a photo of the Prime Minister having a snowball fight. Did you see that?
I must have missed that one.
There was
I was away in Europe, so they didn't show it there.
There is a photo of the Netanyahu family having a snowball fight, and I said to myself, my gosh, you know, he grew up a good part of his teenage years, as you know, in the United States, and it looked like he had a little bit left from those days. It looked like he actually knew what to do when it came to snowball fighting. I was very happy about that.
You know, I'm sure that'll help him in the election.
I don't know. He's trying to look as presidential or as prime ministerial as possible. We'll see what happens. All right, so you're in the thick of things. The election is 11 days away. Do you better understand, now that you're there, the fascination with Naftali Bennett?
I'm not sure it's a fascination. I do think, and again, the numbers are in flux. Again, today there are all sorts of reports of changing numbers. So we always warn not to take the polls too seriously. And, you know, you don't have 11 different states or 7 states or 5 states to focus on. You're focusing on lists. There are 36 lists, and you have many parties that will not make the threshold, meaning a 2% that is necessary in order to qualify to be in the Knesset.
Right.
So even if some parties poll, you know, half a seat, one seat, one and a half, that those seats will be divided amongst the parties that do qualify. And even Kadima, by the way, has not crossed the 2% threshold, which is quite remarkable from being the largest party down to not even perhaps making it in. Labor lost some seats in the latest poll, I think a couple of seats, and Bennett remained strong. Likud, Beitenu picked up some seats, at least according to some initial polling. There'll be many more. They come out every Friday, usually. And we will see what further changes will take place. But the left is so divided against itself, and there are recriminations all the time between Yachimovich and Tzipi Livni and Lapid. There were attempts this week to broker a deal.
Right, I understand all that, but what about Netanyahu? Has he had to adjust to this flurry by Bennett? I would assume, especially as, you know, 11 days remain, and frankly, he would he'd love to see Bennett's numbers go down. Hasn't he had to readjust his strategy of this campaign?
Well, as his numbers have gone down overall, not just to Bennett, but I think you're right that it's primarily to him, he's had to make this appeal about make a strong Likud, because it's the only way you can lead. It's the only way to assure what people on the right would want.
You know, there's a report that he's threatening Likud members who don't vote for Likud. I don't know how you do that, by the way, but
it's a question of how you're going to find them. How do you know? I mean, that would scare you a little bit too. But there is a floating vote. It is not a big vote. The core votes remain the same in the parties, and then it floats. You see that true of Shas. You see it true in some of the other parties that go up and down. And when people, leaders, make mistakes of those parties or communicate wrongly in an interview or in a statement or something, it can affect the support. It's a lot of it is very soft, and I think that's why you see the shifts back and forth amongst them. It'll be a big question about whether the Arab parties come out, and if the Arab vote comes out, and how they vote. There are a lot of variables.
Listen, after this conversation, you're going to be preparing for Shabbos. You got to turn on the TV and email me before Shabbos. Let me know what you think of those campaign ads. I'm really curious to know if there are any really good zingers out there in the television.
I will do so.
I am so curious, because I heard about one in particular, but from a smaller party, that really got the message across. And I'd love to see if B.B. Bennett and obviously all the others are coming up with really creative stuff here over the last 11 days. Because you have to admit, I mean, you're not going to be there because you're only leaving after a couple of days, but you have to admit the next few days in Israel are going to be fascinating.
The next week or two are going to be amazingly interesting as this really intensifies. I think the level of rhetoric will go up and intensify in terms of the charges against one another. There are all sorts of reports that come out, again, charges of corruption, charges of misdeeds or misguidance. And so that's one party. You're also going to have an election in Jordan coming up, which is going to have a serious ramifications. And the question that I asked a number of people was, to what degree did the domestic agenda, if you remember after the demonstrations last summer and the whole social agenda issue, from the immigrants to the cost of living to the taxation policies, all of these things were supposed to be front and center and be the key arguments that were going to be debated between the parties, and yet you see it, they're relegated to relative insignificance. And even Iran is not a major focal point, I think, because of the opposite side there's a consensus on the issue. It seems to me, and I have not looked yet at the commercials, but it's more or less lackluster. You don't have, you know, the sharp debate that you would have, let's say, when you had a Likud candidate versus a Labor candidate, and those were the two blocks. Here you have so much internecine warfare, say BBN and Bennett, or the three major parties of the center left, it's a different kind of election.
So what you're saying is that because there's such a consensus on foreign policy at this point, so to speak, obviously with Iran being front and center, that's why we see the economy as the number one issue in the polls.
I think Iran, that there's a clear consensus, even if it's not necessary about that there's any conclusion, but people don't want to see Iran be nuclear, and I think nobody is going to say something different than that. On the question of peace process, I mean, frankly, nobody sees the prospect of a peace process right now. So while right. there may be discussions about even the debate that many people predicted about the Lebanon war,
right?
You know, and how, I mean, the Gaza war,
right.
and how it was conducted, you don't really see that kind of, intense debate, maybe because everybody's kids served, or because they got out of it without heavy casualties, that the rocket stopped for a month. You know, the latest report shows that I think December was the first month that you didn't have a rocket. There was
right.
one mortar,
right,
and from 637 attacks in December, there were 112.
Right, but even the slight dissenters at that time were saying, if you could do this quickly, then we're with you, and obviously that's what happened.
Exactly, if it had been an extended or elongated
right.
war, it might have been...
Because we had Stephen Miller on Monday, who's gaining this reputation, you know, as a pollster in Israel, and is doing all these articles for the Times of Israel with the polling data. He's the one, by the way, and we had him first, because the poll was out at 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, on Monday, and we had him right after that. He's the one who determined, based on his numbers, that 31% of Israelis, a higher number than you and I have discussed, are undecided at this point, which is pretty significant. 31 still undecided. But anyway, he said that within 24 hours of our conversation, which was the next day, he would release the data about what the number one issue was, and we would be shocked. And of course, that's what he meant, because Iran should be number one, you would think. And the economy sneaks in at number one because of the situation or the setup that you just described. So that's where we stand right now. What do you think?
It's not surprising. Economy is always the number one issue in people's minds.
Yeah, but yeah.
But you know, because, and again, Iran was never going to be the issue because there's no debate over it. There's no difference. You don't have a candidate who says let them become nuclear, or that we shouldn't do everything possible to stop them, or anything, any position like that. So it's not the issue that people are going to make a choice over when there really isn't a great variance. It's a question of who they would have confidence in to take the decision that may be necessary.
By the way, and he said this Tuesday on these airwaves, and I've heard him say it now in multiple places, Naftali Bennett goes out of his way to praise the prime minister. It's like the most unusual campaign tactic I've ever seen. You know, usually
you can also damn with faint praise, as they say. But again, I think that you know, he worked for him. He's not trying to draw the divide there, and he's not trying to paint himself in as the anti-Bibi.
Right.
He's trying to have a much more certain positive stance, which obviously is resonating with a lot of people, and many of them not Orthodox and not traditional Jews, but secular Jews.
You know, there's some people who say that a Hegel successful nomination, meaning if he'd be affirmed, would be actually good for those who want to see little progress between Israel and its Arab neighbors. You think there would be a silver lining if he in fact got in?
I don't think it's relevant at all to that issue. I think Secretary of State might be, one could contend the degree to which the particular person would have an interest in the Middle East or make that a focal point, but I don't think for the Secretary of Defense that becomes his decision or the emphasis he puts on it. That's much more a presidential prerogative or involvement of a Secretary of State. Where it makes a difference is the administration has always posited the security and military cooperation as the hallmark of its and highlight of its relationship with Israel. And the question is, will this change it? You know, while the policy is still set by the president, does the Secretary of State, like other secretaries we've seen in the past, set the tone? Can it shift it? Do people interpret this as a license when somebody who's been accused of having different views, and we will hear during the confirmation hearing. A lot of tough questions, and people should pay attention to the answers. So you don't know until you hear, but you worry about what is the message to those below them. That when you have, I remember George Shultz at one point to me, I can't control people from 5 to 9, but 9 to 5, they're mine, and I'm going to set the policy.
Yeah, but you see, yesterday on the air, I read statements from our local, which were printed in the Jewish Voice, to give them credit, which were from our local government officials, meaning United States senators from New Jersey and New York. So, you know, so for instance, Joe Lieberman, outgoing independent, senator, say he's really pretty down on the Hagel nomination. But then, you know, Chuck Schumer, who you would think immediately would express distress with this type of nomination, is saying, you know, we have to wait and see. First of all, we have to wait and see if he's really nominated, which, of course, he eventually was. And we then have to, you know, listen to the... I mean, shouldn't there be somebody in the U.S. Senate, especially from this region, who are a drop stronger than what you just described and simply come out in a Stop Hagel campaign?
Well, first of all, many people have come out. I mean, there are, I think, 40...
But U.S. Senator from New York? A U.S. Senator from New York?
But I talked to Senator Gillibrand myself, and I know that she did issue a statement, very strong statement on it, raising concerns, and said that she will ask very tough questions, and we'll see. People who are participating as members of our Armed Forces Committee, the preliminary hearing, and having a vote in the Senate, many of them just don't tip their votes in advance, or want to use it as an opportunity to really explore. But you've had scores of people, and I think that Schumer has also made statements raising concern. Again, I can't say for sure that how ultimately they're going to vote. His vote is very key. Yeah. Paul Levin is very key.
Yeah.
Other people are very important. Menendez is also very
important
in New Jersey. And these are all strong supporters of Israel. And we hope that they will, you know, raise the right questions and respond in the right way to this nomination and to others that they're going to have to review.
Lautenberg, Menendez, Gillibrand, Schumer, do you think any of them could actually affirm his nomination in the end?
They are engaged in a very assertive campaign. Senator Hagel has been calling people, explaining his Iran position, saying that things have been taken out of context. I know the messages I got, both from White House and other sources, about some of the concerns that were raised, like Hagel's role as president of the USO and claiming that he tried to close the USO office in Haifa. And it turns out that it was not true, at least according to some very lengthy documentation, which I read. Other things that he's claiming are attributed to him were not correct or taken out of context, whatever. Look, there are certainly things to be concerned about.
Malcolm?
I know people have raised concerns about Brennan's nomination.
That's correct. And Kerry.
Others.
And Kerry. There are people who group him up in the group of three.
Well, Kerry, his voting record was very good on Israel, though he did raise concerns, and especially on settlement issues and things like that. He feels a very close relationship, that he has a warm friendship with Netanyahu, and Netanyahu issued a positive statement on his nomination.
Yeah. But you got to be careful.
But again, what you're raising is the combination of them, which is an issue that people have raised.
Malcolm, you got to be careful. There are former vice presidents who end up doing business with Al Jazeera. You never know what could happen in this crazy world.
Not only do business, but make $100 million.
That's correct.
And selling it to a company that is controlled by the government of Qatar, which means they pay for it with oil.
That's right.
Money. So this is another issue of concern, and one we've been very involved with. I don't know that there are regulatory obstacles we can place to this, but certainly a lot of questions to be raised, a lot of concerns about the coverage, the nature of the coverage, the assumption that Israel is always wrong. And while they can point to certain things like having Israelis on for the first time on a regular basis in the Arab world, still there are legitimate questions raised about the nature of the coverage and how and what they will do once they are in millions of homes in the United States.
Well, I heard
I'm not sure that they will have such broad appeal.
I heard he was angry at Israel anyway. Throughout this whole global warming thing, they go ahead and produce a foot of snow in Israel. Are they crazy? It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, around the world on the web, jnam.org. Malcolm Honlein schlushing his way through Jerusalem. At least that's what he's going to be doing tonight as he's walking on the old streets of the Holy City. Don't forget our programming continues on jmnam.org all through the day, including our incredible Erev Shabbos music stream. Plus, tomorrow night, Saturday Night Siegel, I'll have Rummy host starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And there is a JM Sunday, which continues to grow and grow on our internet web stream. Matt's host starting at 7 a.m. Eastern Time on the stream at jmnam.org. What do you think of Jack Lew moving over to Treasury?
Well, I think it's a remarkable demonstration for an Orthodox Jew. It's a message to other employers that somebody being Sabbath observant and adhering to fundamental religious beliefs is not an impediment to their successful service. And I hope that it will be a role model to others to see that there's nothing you can't achieve, that being religious and particularly being Sabbath and holiday observant it should not become an obstacle. And where it is raised, I think, like Joe Lieberman and others who make a public example and who don't hide their affiliations and their beliefs, even though it doesn't necessarily inform or play a role in their professional activities directly, the fact that the president spoke of his values, his integrity, I think speaks very well at a time when sometimes we are embarrassed by some of the stories that appear. And Jack Lew is somebody who has demonstrated in various positions, a chief of staff, the head of the Office of Management and Budget. He's had worked for Secretary of State as a top official there on administration. And I think he's had a remarkable career.
There are people who, they get a little worried when a noticeably Jewish person is the head of Treasury. You know what I mean?
There are people who believe Jews should not be in positions that would expose them or expose the community to undue criticism, but I don't think that that's the answer. We don't stick our head in the sand. We're not people have anything to hide that people who serve in I bet there were other Sabbath observers, by the way, amongst the early officials of our government. They may have served a different day, but so he may not be the first Sabbath observer.
Good point.
And I think that you can't make judgments on that. What we have to do is hold ourselves to higher standards and make sure that even the decisions and policies are things that you can debate. Personal behavior is something we have to regulate.
All right. By the way, speaking of Sabbath observant, I was up at the New York State Legislature in Albany this week. Do you know that I counted 6 members of the New York State Legislature as Sabbath observers? I may even be off. It may be 7 or 8. Could you imagine that I was able to rattle off 6? That's pretty amazing, though.
Well, I think it's a wonderful statement about the involvement that people, they don't get paid that much in the positions that they're willing to sacrifice in order to serve, and playing a role in Albany. And the same is true when it comes to serving on jury duty or voting or other obligations that we have to fulfill. In that regard, there is another role model, that's Shelley Silver.
That's right.
Who has served in for decades as a Sabbath observer and religious Jew, and given leadership to the assembly in a stellar way. He also is in that category of really wonderful role models.
Well, 100%. My count may be off. I don't want anyone to think that I'm insulting them. I'm simply very bad with numbers. Malcolm, does there have to be a fence with Syria, between Israel and Syria at this point?
I think it's a great idea. I'm very glad that the government of Israel moved on it so quickly. The part of the motivation was that there are more and more terrorist groups, especially the Sunni radical groups, that are operating in areas near Israel's border, near the Golan.
Why didn't they do it 40 years ago?
Because the border with Syria has been quiet for decades. There hasn't been a single incident across it. It's one thing Assad kept him, and he may have done stuff through Lebanon, but he did not. There were no real incidents across the Syrian border, and you didn't have the infiltration and like the potential for now. And also the concern that with the refugees flight, with the breakdown of the government, with people just going in all directions, You remember we had an incident not long ago where people actually got through into the Galil. They were all rounded up.
And how long will it take to build the fence?
Pardon me?
How long will it take to build this thing?
No, it's being done right now. It will be done quickly.
Within months?
I think weeks.
Wow, unbelievable.
Well, they need it now. And, you know, we're seeing many, many new things coming out in the Syrian front, aside from the story of the internal fighting, and even Morsi, the president of Egypt, calling Assad a war criminal and said he has to be charged, and other people...
Well, the numbers are staggering at this point.
Pardon me?
The numbers are staggering at this point.
They're staggering, they're growing, and we're seeing more and more sophisticated weapons in the hands of the rebels, which means that you will see more... high-powered and more firepower directed at them. There's also now reports that there are 50 tons of unenriched uranium that was originally stockpiled for the nuclear reactor that somehow was destroyed recently, last year or 2 years ago, maybe more. The Syrian reactor that, as you know, was taken out probably by Israel, but we don't know for sure. And they had a lot of unenriched uranium, but this falling into the wrong hands is also dangerous, as is the big danger, which still remains, the chemical weapons, and the fact that we saw the red lines of them mixing them and moving them and putting them in bombs. It seems that has stopped, or certainly, if anything, it's being done in a clandestine way. Hezbollah admitted that 5,000 of their troops went into Syria in December, 4 battalions. They claim to have killed 300 rebels, but we're seeing many more groups, especially the al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda-linked elements that are raising concerns in Jordan and in other countries. Russia is trying to hedge its bet, although it realizes that it can't reverse course at this stage and continues to try to prevent sanctions and to sustain the government, looking for what they say is an orderly transition. But it's certainly the situation there continues to deteriorate, and the ramifications will be very great. We see the Kurds could make a move towards independence, which would challenge Turkey. We could see the Muslim Brotherhood groups linking up with others, Turkey backing some Egypt. The Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the Gulf countries backing others, and the competition, the Sunni-Shiite competition, is spilling over into Lebanon in very serious ways. And we see the demonstrations on the Jordanian border by Sunnis in Iraq, and Jordan closed the border there. There are a lot of things going on. I mean, you can't even list, let alone discuss, all of the things that are happening, the turmoil, the unrest, and each of these could be a potential fuse on a much larger explosion.
I don't know. It seems to me like things really heat up every time you land there. That's what it seems like to me.
It was heated up before I got here. I can't take credit or responsibility for it, but, you know, even if we look, let's say, at the events in the PA, we see numbers in the polling showing that numbers who support an armed resistance and military action has gone up. 71% believe Hamas won the war. We see that the talks Morsi has put together between Hamas and Fatah, which is very important, and people should not just buy the pictures. They're not making the kind of progress that has been described.
No, but that's why the polls are favoring them, because now it looks like they're united.
Yeah, but they are not. During this time, while the talks were going on, Fatah arrested Hamas operatives in four or five places, and Hamas executed, or sentenced to death, rather, a leader of Fatah, who was one of their key munitions, explosive experts. So while they put on a veneer, or try to put on some veneer, the fact is that you do not have progress towards reconciliation, which I think is good. The fact that Mashal is conducting the talks angers many of the other people, because they feel he was outside all this time, and he's supposed to step down in a few months. So I would not bet that this is going to yield any kind of notable result. See that the PA and these guys are blaming other Arab donors.
Right.
They never blame themselves. They never blame the policies. They never blame what they did in the UN. You saw what happened there with the big demonstrations by people that the PA was trying to collect the electric bills. So what did they do? They just forgave everybody who hasn't paid the electric bill. And yet they condemn Israel for trying to collect the money for the electricity they're providing.
Unbelievable.
Hey, does the name Essam El Arian mean anything to you?
I don't remember the first name, but I know an El Arian here in the United States.
Well, this is the top...
You mean Sami El Arian?
Essam El Arian. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right. I'm just trying to be dramatic here. He's
the one who was in Florida?
No, top advisor to Morsi, who apparently has resigned from his position.
Oh, he's the Minister of the Interior.
Right. And right. You know so why he announced...
Because he criticized the relationship with Iran.
Well, it says here that he actually invited back to Egypt the descendants of Jews who were thrown out of the country and who fled due to anti-Semitic violence. And
that
according to Israeli...
That was just an off-the-cuff comment. That wasn't the reason...
Well, Israeli commentators are saying that...
It created a reaction in Egypt. That's true. People thought he was nuts. But and you didn't see any people, as far as I know, applying for visas to come back. Or for to renew their
really really you're sure now Malcolm
right. That's so far but you see the division and that the Minister of the Interior was canned not because of comments he made but because he was opposing any kind of reconciliation with Iran
correct
and the which again underscores the fight between the Muslim Brotherhood and Khomeini about leadership in the Islamic world and again goes back to the Sunni Shiite. We're seeing more and more anti-Shiite propaganda coming from the Gulf, coming from other areas. And the Gulf uses Egypt, which is dependent on it for money, as a platform for some of its anti-Iranian and anti-Shiite agenda. So you have this conflict, this intensity in the Middle East between them, which is spreading to different parts. In Tunisia, you saw it with the Muslim Brotherhood resorting to outright anti-Semitism, which has put the small Jewish community there on notice, and despite the fact that government officials try to reassure them, we see the clerics there and elsewhere, the Islamist clerics, taking more and more blatantly anti-Semitic positions.
Where am I here? Yeah, has the United States Congress actually requested, or has the majority of the members of Congress requested that the PLO Washington office be closed in light of what happened to the UN at the UN?
Yes, that was an early move. It was originally in the bill but was removed because it wasn't pertinent to the defense bill, but it is certainly still on the table and a majority of the overwhelming majority has have supported this move as a punishment.
Is that an exclusive decision by the White House?
No, it's a decision of Congress, which goes to the White House.
No. I understand that's their recommendation.
Ultimately, the decision rests. It's going to be up to the White House to...
So there'll never be movement on that. I mean, that would be a political...
Well, I don't know. No, I don't know whether there wouldn't be movement. The administration has been very upset with what the PA has done. They were, you know, they try to force them not to or cajole them into rescinding the effort at the UN. They obviously didn't get it, get the response that they wanted. So the administration is upset, and I think that they're looking for appropriate ways without totally pulling the plug on the PA or undermining it further when we see the kind of things. I only talked about a few of the factors, but the economic situation is terrible. People aren't being paid. They spent $1 million on the celebration of their first armed attack against Israel, which has now become a cause. Lebanon was marked as the founding day of the Fatah,
right,
both in Gaza and in the West Bank.
So when Abbas goes ahead and he wants to change every reference from PA to State of Palestine, that would be considered a slap in the face to the U.S.
And the U.S. has come out very strongly against it. You know, they have opposed it. They said that this is not appropriate, that you don't create labels and rhetoric. You can negotiate and engage in bilateral negotiations. There were spokesmen said this during this week, and I know that very strong messages were communicated to the
Who is that, Bennett or Netanyahu? Who is that, Malcolm? Bennett or Netanyahu? Which one?
I can't tell you. Maybe it's room service. I hope the last.
Maybe they want to tell you they're opening the pool for you for the next hour before Shabbos.
The pool is closed. So it's not a question.
You sure you've already checked it out?
No, they gave out a notice when I came in. Not that I had any intention of really going there.
There's another call. This is, do they know we're in the middle of an important conversation or not?
Yeah, but the time difference throws them.
Where are your men? Where are the people who are supposed to deflect you from all this activity while you're intensely discussing things with me? Where's everybody? Where's your staff? What happened? Has everything broken down? What's going on
here? They're in the mikveh getting ready for Shabbos.
Ah, Malcolm's in the Holy Land getting ready for Shabbos is right. All right, finally, did you hear this episode with people being stranded in Kiev? Are you aware of what happened?
Yes, the airline went bankrupt.
So is this simply a comical story? Or are the people?
It happens often.
It happens often.
You see stories where people get stranded because they sign up with some fly-by-night outfit or discount the airline, and other airlines usually just suck it up and take in these people and honor their tickets,
right?
Because it's bad for the whole industry and hurts air travel when things like this occur.
So wait, you're a jet setter. What advice do you have for people? Only travel with reputable outfits?
Well, that for sure, that people should be traveling with reputable outfits, know who you're dealing with, that sometimes when a deal is too good, sounds too good to be true.
It is.
It isn't true.
Amazing.
It's sort of like the deal in with Chavez. We all thought this was too good, that he was in Cuba in trouble, and you see how the people have come out in these huge demonstrations, and that the hope that we would see a change very soon is being delayed further and further, and the parliament votes to extend his term and to extend the time that he can stay out of the country, that he doesn't have to show up, and so the inauguration gets put off.
Right.
It's quite remarkable.
These candidates are going to be hitting the road running Sunday morning, Malcolm. It's going to be a very interesting last 9 days to this campaign.
Well, I think that almost nothing happens in the government these days because this will be the sole focus of everyone, and because it's so intense and 36 parties competing over a relatively small number of votes and wanting to get in, so people will be very busy. There are rallies all over. There are meetings and, American-style politics. You have American pollsters here giving guidance and talking to people.
Yep.
And in the meantime, we see that Iran continues its merry path, aggressive actions. They say.
Oh, by the way, Iran came out in favor of the Hagel nomination. I'm being serious. I'm not joking around.
Yes, I know. Right. I saw the statement, but they described him as the anti-Israel,
right,
the Zionist candidate. And I'm sure it's not an endorsement he wanted or appreciates.
No, but that's why I say I don't want to see Schumer on the same side of Iran on this issue in the end. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think you could say that. I think that's fair.
I know it's a stretch, but I would like the leadership of the United States Congress that comes from this area to be a little bit more vocal.
Well, people should write and let their elected officials, especially members of the Senate, who are the ones who have to vote on it, but others who may influence the decision or the.
Right. All right, you were making the final point on Iran when I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that we try every week to talk about Iran because people,
right,
unlike the elections, we can't put it aside.
Right.
We're seeing real taboos being broken. We see the Iranian foreign minister is now going to Egypt again. There's a competition between Turkey and Iran with Egypt. Turkey just gave them $500 million of a $1 billion loan that they gave them in Turkey. Iran had offered them money. We see Iranian air flights, the reason why I've mentioned it, canceled at sometimes at foreign airports because they can't pay the bills and they owe money, they owe debt. So the flights of air, and they were not the ones that were flying this group.
But right.
And the new sanctions that are going to hit the shipping, the ports, media, other things are very important. These are U.S. sanctions. The president signed it into law, so hopefully we will see more and more pressure on them.
100%. All right. Enjoy Aretz. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll speak again next week.
Anything but that here.
That's for sure. That's the only way to be there is to enjoy it. There he is, Malcolm Hohnlein, live from Israel here at JM in the AM.